Okay, good morning, everyone. This is the second to last lecture on education in Finland. We are dealing with upper secondary education in our system. And next week, you're going to have the last lecture about higher education in Finland. Before we really start, can you hear me? Okay, I can see that Jan is showing me the thumb. So yeah, good. Let me know if at any point you have difficulties with the sound quality. Sorry about the video quality. It is very sunny today, and the light makes me look like a ghost at the moment. But nevertheless, the slides are more important. And as usual, we are recording this presentation, so you can have a look at it later on. If you have comments, questions, please feel free to ask them anytime you like. No need to raise your hand or anything, just shoot them. Right, good. Just to remind you, we are talking about the level of education that takes place after basic education. And as you probably remember from Pasi's presentation, in Finland, basic education plus the preschool year is the only compulsory education. So at the age of 16, in principle, the teenagers may decide not to continue with their education. In practice, most of them continue, because nowadays the labor market is such that there is very little employment available for people with no vocational qualification or no higher education degree. We have a parallel system, as probably Pia told you the first time you met. We have the traditional general upper secondary education leading to matriculation examination, and then we have the vocational education side of things leading to a vocational qualification. And it is possible to combine them, as this chart shows you. This just to remind you a little bit. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about the entrance from basic education to upper secondary education. Then I'm going to talk about vocational education and training. I'll be using the abbreviation VET quite a lot. Then a bit about the vocational education and training qualifications and studies. And then I'll move on to general upper secondary education. And I suggest we have a couple of minutes break between the vocational education and training side and then the general upper secondary education part of the presentation, because it's kind of tiring to be sitting in front of your computers for 90 minutes in a row. And we can't really talk about the general upper secondary education without talking about matriculation examination. I'm also going to say a few words about the current challenges and current reforms that are going on in both general upper secondary education and in vocational education. And really, at any time you feel like commenting or questioning, asking something, just let me know.
Yeah, maybe I have a question right now. Can you hear me, please? Can you hear me?
I can't hear you, Jan.
Okay.
I mean, I see that your microphone is on, but it's, you know, very low. Okay.
So yeah, can you hear me now?
Or yeah, you asked me to repeat something, but I didn't hear what I was supposed to repeat.
Never mind.
Okay. You can also write it in the chat if you like.
Yeah.
Okay. So, a couple of things about studying in upper secondary education. As is general in Finland, also in higher education, so universities, we don't have tuition fees for Finnish citizens or European Union citizens, and that is valid for the secondary education as well. However, the students in upper secondary education have to buy their textbooks and other materials such as, pens and pencils and calculators. In vocational education, they may need, for example, if you are studying to become a cook, you might need a good set of knives, some protective clothing, and stuff like that. And you are responsible for purchasing them yourself, I mean, as a student. Unlike in basic education and preschool education, where everything is free. However, the secondary level students get a free meal on school days. And at the moment, when because of the COVID pandemic, the secondary education has been mostly operating online, on distance, for about a year now. You can still, as a student, you can go to the school, depending a little bit on the municipality and on the school, how they have organized it, but you can pick up your free meals once or twice a week. So you still, even if you're studying at home, as a secondary level student, you can get a free meal. You can also get a financial subsidy from the state of Finland as a secondary level student. It used to be a very, very small amount of money, but nowadays in secondary education you can get the same sum every week, sorry, every month as the higher education student, so approximately 250 euros per month. But that depends on your age. So if you are still a minor under 18, the parents are supposed to provide, subsidy for you. And also, if you are living with your parents, you don't get as much as if you are of age and living by yourself, renting a flat. It's also possible to get free accommodation in very specific cases. If you are underage and you have to go to school very far away from your hometown or home village, as is the case quite often in the countryside, you may be entitled to free accommodation. But what happens when when somebody finishes basic education, 9 years of comprehensive school? Well, you apply. During the spring of your ninth grade, you apply to secondary education. And usually, the entry requirement for entering upper secondary education, be it vocational or be it general, is that you have to have a school leaving certificate from the comprehensive school or a similar certificate from abroad if you have completed your education, your basic education elsewhere outside of Finland. We have a national joint application system. It's online, has been for quite a while now, and the applicants fill in their applications listing their schools or the educational programs they want to apply in order of preference. And yearly, about a bit more than a half of the people who complete the ninth grade of comprehensive school, they go to the general upper secondary school, so which is the more sort of traditional, more academically oriented, if you like, and which used to be the only way to access higher education. But it's not anymore. And I'm going to talk about this a bit more a little bit later on. And more than 42% go to vocational education. Sorry about the statistics. These are from 2014, but quite frankly, I haven't found as clear statistics from the past couple of years. So I'm continuing with this. The situation has not changed that much. Then we have about 2.7% of students who do not continue their studies at all, and about 3% more who go into additional training, such as the 10th grade. And Pasi probably told you that the 10th grade is an optional year after the compulsory 9 years of basic education, during which you can try and improve your grades, you can concentrate on the subjects you are struggling with most, and it's a good chance for the youngsters to think about what they want to do later on, what they want to study. And only about 1.3% do not apply for further studies. So what can we say? If we have about a bit less than 3% who do not continue their studies at all, and only about 1% who do not apply at all, what does this tell you? 3% do not continue, but only 1% do not apply. Any suggestions?
I suppose that they apply after the 10th grade.
Yes, and as Jessica wrote here as well, some do not get accepted. That's exactly it. Access to upper secondary education is not automatic in Finland. You have to apply. And as you can tell from the percentages, not everybody gets accepted. So they apply someplace, but they don't get accepted. And it's a matter of supply and demand in a way. We have some programs, some educational programs that are really popular, and it's difficult to get accepted. And then we have in some other programs which are not popular at all. Right. Oh, come on. So, to go on to vocational education and training, what comes to mind when you think about vocational education and training?
Maybe some more professional careers to be in order to be like mechanics, electricians, and other stuff.
Yes, exactly. Trades, crafts, hands-on skills, and professional workers. Yes, thanks for your comments. Great. That's exactly what it is. What about the popularity of vocational education and training? Is it a good option? Is it a popular option in your countries to go to a vocational school after basic education?
In Spain, it's one of the the ways you can take if you are not thinking of going to college.
So it's okay, it's accepted.
Actually, in Spain, the demand for vocational education has gone up in the past years because at first it was seen like, oh, you have to go to college, but now people are taking vocational education more seriously. So nowadays, people are more likely to go to a vocational education school and to college than, for example, 10 years ago.
Great. And Jessica says that it's not popular in the US. Generally, it's a little prejudiced against. Yeah. Right. Thanks. Well, this used to be, the case, what Jessica described here in the US. It actually used to be like that in Finland as well. And what Dorka says as well, said as well. you know, the previous situation. When I went to school ages ago, vocational education used to be for those who were not so academically talented, for whom the general upper secondary education or higher education was not really an option. But the status and the image of vocational education and training has really changed a lot in the past 20, 25 years in Finland. And I'm going to talk about the reasons in a minute. But this is quite a typical picture image from a vocational school. And I have some more pictures here in my slides as well, as soon as my presentation starts working again. Good. So very briefly about the history of VET in Finland. The first ones were actually established already in the 19th century, around 1850s, 1860s. But the more systematic development of vocational education and training actually began only after the Second World War, so in the 40s and 50s. The reason being that until the Second World War, and even for a couple of, well, a decade or two after the end of the war, Finland was very heavily an agricultural country. So a lot of the workforce was working in agriculture, and there was little formal education needed for that. People usually learned the job from their parents or from some other people. So learning by watching and learning by doing. And back in the days of my basic and secondary education, so in the 80s and 90s, there were three levels of vocational qualifications. We had the school level qualifications that you could take immediately after basic education. Then we had the college level vocational qualifications, which you could take after general upper secondary school, or then after finishing the school level vocational schools. And then we had the higher vocational qualifications for example, nurses and physiotherapists and people like that. However, in mid-90s, these college level qualifications and higher qualifications merged into the universities of applied sciences, or polytechnics, as we still sometimes call them. And you are probably aware that here in Jyväskylä, we actually have quite a big university of applied sciences with approximately 8,000, 8,500 students as well. The biggest difference between universities of applied sciences and traditional universities is that in a university of applied sciences, you usually complete a bachelor's degree. There are very few programs for so-called professional masters, whereas in traditional university, when you are accepted, you are usually given the study right all the way to master's as well. And if you want to do a PhD, you have to go to a traditional university. We don't have a PhD program or any PhD programs in the universities of applied sciences, at least not for the time being. And another difference is that the universities of applied sciences tend to be a little bit more practice oriented than the universities, which are more theory based. A big change happened in the early 2000s. The on-the-job learning was incorporated into the curricula, because prior to that, it used to be so that the student studied for approximately 2.5 years in the vocational school, and then they went to a workplace for a practical part of their studies, so an internship, a traineeship, for about half a year. But in the early 2000s and ever since that, they have been spending, let's say, two times 6 weeks at school, and then 1 6-week period in a workplace. So it's more equally distributed within the studies as opposed to having just one big final practice. Nevertheless, the time is just about the same, so approximately 6 months. Well, here are some of the focal points of VET in Finland and the targets that it's been developed towards to. So improving the skills of the workforce, obviously, and vocational education and training is in constant dialogue with the labor market and the employers, and they are trying to figure out what might be the skills needed in future in, you know, different vocations. And lifelong learning is very, very important there as well. So we have the initial vocational training, which takes place after the basic education. And then, depending a little bit on your field, you can continue to further and continuing vocational training. And we have, we used to have 119 different study programs in vocational education. And they led to 53 different qualifications. These are in the process of changing. They were supposed to change already by last year, by the end of December 2020, so that the qualifications number would drop from 53 to 43. But because of the current pandemic, the process was not really finalized by the original deadline. And I was checking the web pages of the vocational change at, this week prior to this presentation, but I couldn't find the new timeline, but I suppose they are trying to do it as soon as possible. And then one thing that is really important is that the vocational qualification nowadays gives you a general eligibility for higher education studies. So you can enter a university of applied sciences or a traditional university with a vocational degree. You don't need to complete general upper secondary school in order to enter higher education. And I think this is a great thing because as I said, when I was in basic education, it was not possible to enter university if you didn't complete general upper secondary education. And you had to make the decision when you were 15, 16. And I don't think many of us know at the age of 15 or 16 what we really want to do when we sort of grow up. I'm 50 and I still don't know. So, how many VET students join the polytechnics or universities? It varies from program to program. In some cases, in some university programs, you have to do some kind of complementary studies if you haven't completed the general upper secondary education, but in some others, it's not a requirement, you can just apply. For example, in our primary teacher education program, we usually have 90 to 100 students every year, and about 3 or 4 have a vocational background. So it's not a huge number, but in the universities of applied sciences, the percentage is bigger, because it's kind of the, in a way, it's the more logical continuum for somebody with a vocational background to continue in the same field, but in higher education. We have two ways of organizing vocational education here in Finland. We have the apprenticeship training and then the traditional vocational schools. Do you know what apprenticeship training is? Does it exist in your home countries?
I don't know what it is, sorry.
Okay, Raquel doesn't know, so I will tell you. Apprenticeship training is hands-on learning at a workplace. So it means that the majority of the education, 70 to 80% of the time, it actually takes place at the workplace. And you only go to the vocational institute for some theoretical studies and also the examinations and skills demonstrations to show what you have learned. So, for example, if somebody wants to study to become a hairdresser, you would go to an experienced hairdresser shop and study there, and this experienced hairdresser will show you, you know, how to do it, how to cut your customer's hair, how to dye, how to do perms, and so on, whatever is involved. But still, as a student, you have to go to the vocational institution for certain required theoretical studies. In the case of hairdressing, for example, it might be compulsory chemistry and occupational health and stuff like that, because you are dealing with chemicals and things, and you have to learn also the theory behind that. But most of your time is spent in the workplace, at the workplace. And Jessica comments that her German flatmate talks about it, but this system doesn't really exist in the US. Yeah, I think so as well. Apprenticeship training is actually quite popular. We have about 7% of the vocational students educating themselves by apprenticeship training. But it would be more popular if there were more funding for that. The students usually like it a lot because, as opposed to the smallish study subsidy you get from the state if you are a regular student in a vocational school, you know, vocational institution, in apprenticeship training, you get actual salary, actual wages. You make a temporary employment contract with the workplace you are apprenticing at. Sorry about the funny noises. One of my dogs is drinking behind me. The funding for apprenticeship training has been cut in the past few years during the past government. And unfortunately, they can't accept all the students that are, well, all the applicants that are applying for apprenticeship training. Usually, the students in apprenticeship training tend to be adult students. We are with perhaps a previous career or previous profession, and then they for some reason want to change or need to change their careers. And then for them, the apprenticeship training usually is a little bit better option, not only because of the wages, but also because it is easier for them to show their knowledge, the skills, the previously acquired knowledge and skills. And sorry, a little break here. I'm opening the door for the aforementioned dogs.
So right. Only 7% of all the vocational students take this option. And like,
as I said, we have a lot of, the third one as well. We have a lot of different qualifications, a lot of different programs, and the usually it takes 3 years of full-time studying for somebody to graduate with a vocational education qualification. We are using the old Finnish credits still for the vocational education and education and training. So it's 120 credits, 3 years of full-time study. And the majority of the studies consist of vocational subjects and a minimum of 20 credits of on-the-job learning. Then there are the general course subjects, some elective studies, and depending on what you choose to do, there might be some more than 10 credits of elective studies, but 10 is like the minimum. And the parts of qualification are called units, and the students' performance is assessed based by the units. And at the moment, there is just one grade for each unit, but this is changing as part of the process. And Céline says that the apprenticeship is very popular and common in Switzerland. Approximately 70% of the students do this. Okay, great. It's really popular then. I know it's really popular in Germany as well. So that's probably, the area where it is very, the most popular way of acquiring vocational qualification. So, learning outcomes for the units, and the qualification consists of units, and the units are assessed together, both from the theory and practice side. But as I said, this is changing. Here you can see the fields of vocational education and training. Basically, it covers everything that we also have in higher education, humanities and education, culture, social services, technology, natural sciences, tourism, catering, domestic services, and so on and so on. In education, we actually have, or in the field of education, we actually have very, very few vocational qualifications. We have, you can be an assistant nurse specializing in childcare, or you can be, you can get a qualification to work as a school assistant, but not much more than that, because the degrees in education tend to be higher education degrees. This is an example of vocational qualification. I already mentioned the assistant nurse qualification, and this is actually it. So this is a vocational qualification in social and healthcare, which qualifies you to work as an assistant nurse. You can see the vocational modules on the red in the red box here. 50 credits of compulsory modules, then you have specialization-specific modules, 30 credits, then you have optional vocational modules, 10 credits. To give you an idea about what this means, is that compulsory modules for all, the vocational modules include, for example, studying in the different fields of nursing. So all the students have to study the basics of working with elderly people, working with hospitalized people, be it in internal medicine or surgery or something like that. They have to know the basics of working with children, and so on and so on. But then in the specialization specific module, you can actually choose whether you want to specialize in working with the elderly, for example, or with the psychological patients, or with children. And in For example, a friend of mine recently, well, recently, 3 years ago, graduated from this program, and she specialized in hospital administration. So she's an assistant nurse, but she does not work with patients. She works within hospital or healthcare administration. So that's one option as well. And then in optional vocational modules, you can choose from a list of courses what you want to do. If you want to, for example, specialize or do some extra studies in first aid or something like that. That depends a little bit on the school and of course on the availability of courses every year. But the compulsory modules are the same everywhere. Then you have the core subjects, which basically mean that you have to have some general subjects like mathematics, languages, Finnish for most of us, I mean mother tongue, and at least one foreign language plus the second national language, which is Swedish for most of us. And depending on your program, it could be, chemistry, physics, health education, and so on and so on. And then you can choose your optional studies in the core credits. For example, ICT or entrepreneurship, that's really popular, for example, for the students in this social and healthcare program, because many of them aim at having a company of their own later on, running a daycare or running a home or some kind of service facility for the elderly, and so on and so on. And then there are also the elective or free choice modules, 10 credits. Depends. This can be basically anything. And if you are combining the matriculation examination, so enough studies from the general upper secondary education to graduate with the matriculation examination in four subjects and vocational education, you will include the general upper secondary education courses in the free choice modules here and also here in the core subjects. It is also possible to do the entire coursework needed for general upper secondary education and vocational education combined, but that's not so common because it requires quite a lot of studying and usually a minimum of 4 years, and not everybody wants to do that much work. But the combining the minimum coursework in four subjects to graduate with matriculation examination and then a vocational qualification, that's actually quite popular. We have approximately 500 to 600 students in Jyväskylä doing that. Right. I already talked about the position of vocational education and training and how it has changed in the past 20 or so years. And as I told you, the popularity has really increased since the early 2000s. And you can really see that from the fact that for more than 10 years now, the majority of applicants, so the people who finish a basic education, 9 years of comprehensive school, and they apply to secondary education, approximately 60% of those applicants actually list a vocational program as their primary choice. So it's more popular than the general upper secondary education. There are, of course, several reasons for this popularity. In general, I'd say that the VET programs have been developed more towards the labor market, the world of work. It's kind of more relevant nowadays than it used to be back in my days, for example. Then there have been some campaigns boosting the image of vocational education, mostly organized by the Ministry of Education and Culture. Then there is the skills competitions. Have you heard of skills competitions?
I haven't.
You haven't, okay. Skills competitions are actually, they are not only in Finland, they are worldwide. They are competitions for vocational students or people who have relatively recently graduated from vocational programs, and they are competing in their, you know, in their vocation. I have some photos that actually might help you understand. But for example, when I was working in the local vocational institution, I was working with students who studied to become waitresses and restaurant cooks mostly. And one year they were, we had the, you know, the school level skills competitions to figure out who would go to the regional level and then the national level of skills competitions. And for example, the restaurant cook students were given a task of planning and preparing a three-course meal from certain ingredients. And then they had a certain specific time in which they had to prepare the meal. And then the jury was assessing their performance, not only, you know, how good the food tasted, but also how pretty it looked, how nicely it was presented, and so on and so on. So this is what is going on in the skills competitions, and they are quite highly publicized every year. We were supposed to have the national skills competition in Jyväskylä last spring, but, well, for known reasons, they had to cancel it. This year it's going to take place in Oulu, but I very much doubt that they will be able to organize it because of the COVID. But last but not least, I think this is probably the biggest single factor behind the popularity or increase in popularity of vocational education. It gives you the general eligibility for higher education. You can apply to University of Applied Sciences, a traditional university, with a vocational qualification, which, as I said already a couple of times, used not to be possible 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So now it is possible, and it's very many people decide to go to vocational education because they know that it's not necessarily a dead end after that, education-wise. And the other thing, which I have not written here, but which I strongly suspect, if you go to general upper secondary education, you spend approximately 3 years there, then you graduate and you still are not employable, so to say. You still don't, you are not very close to finding any employment, any jobs, because you just have a general education. So why not spend 3 years in a vocational school? Then at least you have a vocational qualification, and you might start working and earning some money. So the sort of financial aspect of it is also important, I suspect. These are pictures from skills competitions a couple of years ago. You can see the different departments, so to say. We have hairdressing competitions here, and then we have cosmetology students competing here. What else can we see? Dressmaking around here, and so on and so on. And here is also another picture from that skills competition. Carpentry students are planning and implementing their task here. So everybody is given the same task, the same ingredients or materials, and then they are doing the job. A few words about the challenges. in vocational education and training, we have a bigger discontinuation dropout rate in VET, about 9% of the students, which is quite big if we compare it to the dropout rate in general upper secondary education, which is only 4%. The dropout rate in higher education is less than 6 in the traditional universities and about 8.6 in the universities of applied sciences. But the challenge in statistics like this is that sometimes it's difficult to say whether the student is actually dropping out or whether they are just, you know, transferring from one program to another, especially within higher education, because this might take, you know, they might take a leap year, a gap year, and then continue in something, in another program. But nevertheless, the challenges in with the dropout rate is quite high in VET. Then there are the budget cuts in all education, but the budget cut for vocational education was bigger than most. So the student, the number of students to be admitted is smaller. That's not only because of the budget cuts, but also because of the smaller age groups, cohorts, fewer children born every year in Finland. But what is directly related to the budget cuts is the amount of contact teaching. I heard from a friend of mine whose son was studying in a vocational program that they, even prior to Corona, okay, now it is a totally different cup of tea, but a kettle of fish, but the number of contact teaching hours, even before the COVID situation, could be as low as 10 hours per week. If you think about your average 16 year old teenager, they don't necessarily have the skills to manage their time and to be motivated enough to be self-directed enough to complete their studies. So for them, the presence in the classroom with the teachers, to be under the guidance of somebody, would be quite important. So unfortunately, these cuts in the number of contact teaching hours have a negative impact on the learning outcomes of vocational education students. Then the emphasis on the on-the-job learning, so more time spent in the workplaces doing the on-the-job training, on-the-job learning, is also another matter. Because the increased number of on-the-job learning means that not all supervisors in the workplaces are as well educated and experienced as they probably should be. Here are some initiatives that we have had in the past 10, 15 years. I'm not going to go into details here. I'm just going to mention this preparatory instruction or vocational start, as it is known, which is a very nice initiative aimed at reducing the number of people dropping out of, first of all, dropping out after basic education, so not continuing their studies, and dropping out vocational education later on. The preparatory instruction of vocational start means that a student in that program can try out 3-4 different vocational programs during one academic year. And if they continue in one of those programs, all the things, all the credits they have done during that sort of tentative preparatory year are counted into their final, towards their final qualification. And then to conclude with some things about the vocational education and training reform that we are going through at the moment. It started in 2018 and it's been implemented, you know, partially. Some parts are already in action and some are still in the process of being changed. So one of the big changes was that the funding system for vocational education and training changed. So it's not a lump sum, automatic lump sum every year anymore from the ministry. They have indicators such as the impact of the VET institution and the performance of the students. It includes indicators such as how many students start, how many students graduate, so you know, successfully finish the programs, how many students are employed after a certain time period after their graduation, and so on and so on. So when the funding changes from based on these kind of indicators, it means that the quality management and the development processes in the vocational education and training are really, really important. And the institutions, education providers really have to focus on providing information, providing the students with quality education and try and guidance, counseling services to get them through the programs. Nowadays, there is also a tendency to individualize the studies, so offer the students more sort of personal choices, personal study paths regarding their studies, and also the recognition of prior learning. So if you already know how to do something, you don't necessarily have to sit through a course. You can show it either with a written examination or then a skills demonstration, depending on, you know, what you are trying to show. And as I said during the previous slide, there is this more emphasis on the job learning. So more from schools to the workplaces, that's the tendency that is going on. And also, as I said, the guidance and support services are very much in focus at the moment because of the certain difficulties in vocational education and training, the dropout rate being one of them, a relatively high number of students with some kind of special needs is another. So individualized learning and support is needed in there as well. Then there are there is this curriculum development process. So by the end of this year, if I remember correctly, we should have new curricula for all vocational qualifications. And the extent of the curricula is going to change from 120 to 180 study points. It doesn't mean an extra year. It just means that the way they calculate the extent of studies will change. The assessment scale will change. It used to be from, you know, 1, 2, 3. Now it's going to be similar to universities and upper secondary, universities of applied sciences. So from 1 to 5. And then there are the emphasis of skills demonstrations is going to be even bigger than it is nowadays. And also that now that they have just one grade for each unit, so the theory and practice are going were assessed as one unit. In future, they are going to be assessed separately. So the students will have one grade for the theoretical part of the unit and another grade for the practical part of the unit. And then the application system, this has already changed. There is the joint application system in spring, where the majority of the students apply, but then there is a possibility to apply throughout the year if there are vacant places in that program. So not just, you know, one time a year, but continuously. And before we go to the general upper secondary education, I suggest we take a shortish break. It is 10 past 11 now. Shall we continue at 11:15 with the general upper secondary education? See you in 5 minutes.
All right.
Click on the recording as well again. Good. Then general upper secondary education. I reserved a little bit shorter time for this because I guess this is more similar in all of our countries. General upper secondary education is the traditional route to higher education. In principle, it's just a continuum of what you did in basic education. You just study a couple of more subjects, including psychology and philosophy, and you go deeper in the subjects that you already studied. If we think a little bit about the legislation regarding general upper secondary education, there are two laws that regulate the functionings of the schools. There is the law on general upper secondary education, and then there is a separate law on matriculation examination. And as I said earlier at the beginning of the presentation, I'm going to talk about the matriculation examination last in this presentation. Then there is a separate law regarding the school funding, and that actually affects the functionings of schools to an extent. We have approximately 340 general upper secondary schools in Finland, but the number of schools is actually decreasing. The tendency is to merge smaller units into bigger ones. This happens in basic education as well, but especially in general upper secondary education. Every year, about 30 to 40,000 students take the matriculation examination and graduate from general upper secondary education. And if we compare the number of graduates from general upper secondary education and basic education 5 years ago, in 2006, spring 2016, there were 30,500 graduates from general upper secondary school compared to 58,000 from basic education. So as you can see, a bit more than half the age group. But here the chart shows you the decreasing numbers of students and the numbers of matriculation examinations taken every year. It's a slight decrease, but you can still see it from the chart. Blue is opiskelijat, practicing your Finnish as well, so students, and this greenish color means examinations. And the chart starts from 2016, and as you can see, the number of students has dropped from 120,000 to about 100,000. And the number of examinations also shows a bit of a decrease. What the matriculation examination is again? Yes, matriculation examination is the only compulsory nationwide examination in Finland. It is taken at the end of general upper secondary school. I will talk about this in detail a little bit later on, but it's sort of an equivalent to SAT in the US. In general upper secondary education, as I already said, the small schools are merging into bigger units. which here in Jyväskylä, for example, it means that we actually have only two units providing general upper secondary education, each with more than 1,200 students. So they are relatively big schools by Finnish standards. We have a third general upper secondary school, which is actually the teacher training general upper secondary school, which has approximately 300 to 400 students. But the reason why I'm not including that in these figures is because the teacher training school is part of the university. It's not the same education provider as the other two units here in Jyväskylä. And as you probably figured out, the students are more heterogeneous nowadays in general upper secondary school than what they used to be. There are probably several reasons for this. I like to think that it's partly because of the relatively good special education support service system that we have in basic education, so that more students can access general upper secondary education. Once again, back in my days, 35 years ago or so, the students who had learning difficulties were definitely not encouraged to go to continue in general upper secondary education. Jan is asking here, heterogeneous in what way? Mostly, the language background is one thing. We have a growing number of youngsters in Finland whose mother tongue is something else than Swedish or Finnish, which sometimes causes difficulties in studying. The other is general learning difficulties, which I just tried to describe. But one of the reasons for the, of course, the motivation is also, it varies from student to student, because as you probably deduced from the percentages when we were discussing vocational education and training, you notice that some students could not get in to the programs they are really interested in. So in fact, it is more difficult to get accepted to some vocational education programs than to general upper secondary school. So to simplify it a little bit, we have in general upper secondary school, we have those students who are really motivated, who know right from a relatively young age that they want to go to higher education, they want to go to university. These kids are usually quite talented academically, or at least they are motivated and willing to work quite a lot to get good grades and to succeed in general upper secondary education. But then we have those students who actually wanted to go to vocational school, but didn't get accepted there and ended up in general upper secondary education. Of course, some of them make do with the situation, and they find their motivation and they work hard to succeed well, but some are not actually that motivated. And regardless of the fact that the position of vocational education and training has improved a lot, we still have families in which it's kind of the parents push their children towards going to general upper secondary school, even though the child, him or herself, wants to continue or would prefer continuing in vocational school, vocational education. So not all the children in general upper or youngsters in general upper secondary school are happy with the choice, but the majority, of course, is. Okay. Then there is the big matter of ICT. The upper secondary education in vocational and in general side has been changed quite a lot because of ICT. You know, the majority of materials, reading materials, we are talking about ebooks, we are talking about exercises, you know, tests, everything is online in e-form. Then we have courses, online courses, and the matriculation examination is nowadays entirely digital as well, not, you know, paper and pen as it was until recently. The smaller generations, I already mentioned, we have the number of children born every year is smaller. So how long do we have enough students for both the general upper secondary and vocational sides? And of course, the dropout after basic education. So the 5 to 10% of children, youngsters who don't continue to secondary education. A few words about the practicalities of general upper secondary school. Similar to basic education, one school year is 190 days. And depending on the municipality, the school year is divided into periods. There can be 5 or 6 periods every year. And in general upper secondary school, the period ends with an examination week. So you study for, if they are following a 6-week period system, you study for 5 weeks, and then there is 1 week of examinations. And something that is very typical and specific to Finnish general upper secondary school is that the students really plan their own study path. So it's not based on year groups anymore, it's based on courses. You have to complete a minimum number of 75 courses in order to graduate from general upper secondary education. I'm going to show you the list of courses in a minute. But this means that even if you have 2 best friends who go to the school together, they don't necessarily have the same timetable. Depends on their choices and how they plan to complete their studies. Because there is such a lot of independence required and organizational skills required from the students, the importance of study counseling cannot be emphasized enough. Also, something else that has changed quite a lot is the teacher's role, not only in general upper secondary education, but also in basic education. Teachers are no more seen as, you know, sources of information. It's more like they are the facilitators, guides of learning, and the actual learning takes place in the students' heads, and the students do it themselves. Because of this individuality of the study paths and a lot of electivity regarding the timing and course choices, there has to be a good flow of information between the students and school administration, and of course between the parents and school and students themselves. And in order to have that, they have to have good administration software. Vilma is the most commonly used in Finland, although others exist as well. And there has to be a relative flexibility to the system, so that if a student notices that, oh my, I have forgotten to complete this course, it's possible for the student to pick up that course and complete it without a lot of red tape, a lot of bureaucracy. Picture from, pardon, very typical general upper secondary school hall. So there are desks and chairs for group working and individual working as well. The classrooms tend to be quite traditional in Junmalapa secondary schools. Depends a little bit, or quite a lot, on the school building, of course. In the more modern buildings, the premises can be quite versatile, but in the old buildings, it's very difficult to organize the classrooms in any other way than the traditional, you know, desks in one row. I promised to show you a list of the courses required for the completion of general upper secondary education. Here you can see it. You can see that, for example, in mother tongue and literature, Mitya. Sorry, they are not usually this restless. I don't know what's happening. Mother tongue and literature, we have 6 compulsory courses. And then each school has to offer at least 3 specialization courses in mother tongue and literature in addition to the compulsory courses. The foreign languages, you have in your first foreign language a minimum of 6 compulsory courses. The majority of Finnish students choose English as their first foreign language, but it is not a must. It can be something else. Depends on your municipality, on the school, what they have on offer. Mathematics, we have 1 joint course for everyone, and then you choose whether you want to do the basic syllabus or the advanced syllabus in maths. And on it goes. Do you see any surprises here? Anything that strikes you as strange? I don't see or hear any comments, so apparently everything is... Oh, now somebody wrote something. Not really, yeah. Okay, good. So we have guidance and counseling here, 2 courses of that. And the minimum number of courses is 75. Okay. And as you can see here, the minimum number, out of the compulsory courses, you get 47 to 51, depending on whether you take the regular course in mathematics or the advanced syllabus in mathematics. And then you complement the compulsory courses with the specialization and elective courses. Guidance course is unique to Jessica. Yeah, yeah. It is, the aim is to help the students with their studying techniques, to recognize their own strengths and weaknesses in their study techniques, but also to provide them with career counseling, career guidance. So what to do after they finish the general upper secondary education. About the daily life. Can you change between basic and advanced in mathematics? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. But if you have completed a certain number of courses from the advanced syllabus, then it's not possible to switch to basic syllabus anymore. But I can't remember by heart how many courses that is. Okay. About the daily life, I have included the teacher training, general upper secondary school timetables. Do you see the web page of the general upper secondary school, teacher training general upper secondary school? No, okay. Still the PowerPoint. Thanks, I am switching it here. What about now?
We can see it.
Yes. Okay, great. Sometimes the screen sharing does not follow as it should. Good. So here we have the school year 2021. The autumn term began on the 12th of August and finished on the 19th of December. The autumn holiday was week 42, and so on and so on and so on. And here you can see that the teacher training general upper secondary school follows the five period system. The first period began on the 12th of August and finished on the 1st of October. And right now we are in the fourth period, which began on the 11th of February and will finish after Easter on the 14th of April. And here you can see the blocks. And this is an important feature when a student is finalizing their course selection. You see that, for example, the first session, first lesson on Monday begins at 8:15 and finishes at 9:30. And it belongs to this red block, block four. And the following lesson, 9:45 to 11 o'clock, is a yellow one, block three. And what does this mean? Let me open a second web page as well. Okay, this is slow to open. Here you can see the course offer. So we are living the fourth period. Hey, this is an old one. Sorry, my link is broken. It was supposed to take you to the current one. So I will just open it from here. Come on. Oh, it won't open it. Oh, okay, so I'm sorry, I have to show you the old one to you because I should log on to the system in order to be able to show you the current version. Well, never mind. Let's say that we are living in the fourth period as we are, and you wanted to choose a course in the for Monday morning. It was block four. And here you can see what you can choose for block four. English, this course, Swedish, another course of English, German, English, French, mathematics, chemistry, mother tongue, and so on and so on. And then for the second lesson, it was block three. So it's mathematics. These are all different courses, 4.1, 4.2, 4.3. MAB is the basic syllabus, 2.1 course there. And this is how the students make the, it's like, you know, composing, completing a puzzle. You make the different bits and pieces fit into your timetable. And of course, first you have to make certain that you have completed all the compulsory courses, because you can't graduate if you haven't finished the compulsory courses, and then you can start complementing your program with the elective courses. Usually, for the first year, first period, the principal of the school makes the timetables for everyone, because at that point everybody has to do, you know, all the courses, so they can have the principal can compose the timetables as he or she likes. But from the second period onwards, it's up to the student with the help of tutors, staff members, study counselors to plan their studies. Sounds complicated, and it is to an extent, but it's still quite okay with the help of the good software and the staff members of schools. In school, usually the relationship between students and teachers is quite good. There is very low hierarchy in Finnish schools, also in universities. Unfortunately, you don't really get to experience it because everything is online this semester and last semester. But we tend to be pretty informal with our teachers, even in universities. Most of the students, as said, are motivated. They have a positive attitude towards the studies. But as I said, not everyone, because in some cases, the student would prefer being someplace else. For general upper secondary education, there is a very strong cultural heritage in our society. It's something that has been valued quite a lot in the past, and it still continues in the present to an extent. The schools have a very strong autonomy in Finland, and that's why it's possible for the schools to develop their own culture. Some schools, for example, emphasize, let's say, music and art, drama more than others. Some others may be focused a bit more on physical education. And we even have some special schools that concentrate on, let's say, football or something. It depends. This is the second year students, or those who are in the middle of their studies, are organizing a ball every year, except for this year, of course. And they tend to dress. The tradition was to dress in old clothes, so in your grandmother's clothes or something, but this has developed towards the sort of the American prom culture thing in the past 15 years, more and more. Then to conclude with matriculation examination. As I said, it's the only compulsory nationwide test in our school system, and only those who who finish the general upper secondary education take it every year. It was originally an entrance examination to the then only university in Finland, Alexander University, nowadays known as the University of Helsinki, but eventually it evolved into a school leaving test, a school leaving examination for general upper secondary education. It's organized twice a year, in autumn and in spring. Actually, the spring version is going on now. The first examination was on Tuesday this week on Finnish. And today is the second part of, well, mother tongue. And today is the second part of the mother tongue examination. It's the same exam for all the participants who are taking it at the same time. So everybody who is taking it in Finland today is doing the same examination. And the student has to sit a minimum of 4 examinations. But the only compulsory subject is the mother tongue. The rest can be chosen from a certain list of subjects. For example, you can sit a couple of foreign languages and mathematics, or then you can choose to do 2 of the so-called reading subjects, including biology, geography, history, ethics, philosophy, psychology, health education, so on and so on, but only 2 of those. And then you can sit as many optional examinations as you want to, and that you can take in 3 examination rounds. So no more than 3 times. And for example, some of the languages are organized at the same time on the same day, so it's not necessarily possible to sit 2 examinations two languages at the same time because they are taking place simultaneously. There is a special matriculation examination board that runs the matriculation examination system. They are also eventually responsible for the students' grades. The matriculation examination is highly respected, and I've put the quotation marks because in a way, yes, it is. It's a big deal. The graduates are always, the names are published in newspapers all over the country. And the family and especially grandparents tend to make a big deal out of it. But in actual practice, it doesn't really matter that much because we do have alternative ways of, because okay, 100 years ago, even 50 years ago, it was a big deal to matriculate because not everybody had the chance to go to upper secondary school, and it was still possible to get a job with matriculation examination papers only. Nowadays it's not. So you have to do something else after you finish the general upper secondary school, be it vocational school, be it University of Applied Sciences, be it traditional university, but something is needed. So the grades are not so crucial anymore. However, the Ministry of Education and Culture has put for the past 10 years or so a lot of pressure on the universities to utilize the grades from the matriculation examination more in the student selection to the universities. And this is something that we have had to do. So nowadays we have a quota for the students who enter universities based on the matriculation examination grades only. But once again, there is a huge variation between the disciplines and the programs at the universities, because for example, in teacher education programs, you still have to organize, or we still have to organize, the so-called aptitude test. So papers are not enough. We have to interview the candidates. And that's why the final selection of students is not based on the matriculation examination grades, it's based on the entrance examinations. But in some other disciplines, it can be based on papers only. And this is a very typical picture of matriculation examination. But as you can see, this is still pen and paper. And nowadays it's, I have another picture. Yeah, nowadays it's more like this. Everybody has a laptop. This is the grading scale for matriculation examination. I'm not going to go into detail except to say that there is a normal distribution, bell curve, for the grades in most subjects, but nowadays, in some subjects where the number of candidates taking the examination is very small, they don't follow the normal distribution because that does not give the valid grade distribution if the number of students is very, very small. About the challenges in general upper secondary education, there is this new curriculum that was launched in 2016. And to some extent, the content in the curriculum changed a bit, not like drastically, but still quite a lot. And the matriculation examinations have changed entirely. They are doing them online, digitally nowadays, which means that even though the computers don't have access to, Google or something, but still the way the exams are constructed has changed quite a lot. One of the biggest challenges in upper secondary education is financial, as is the case with vocational education as well. The number of courses offered in local schools, in local general upper secondary schools, has decreased because of the cuts in funding. The other thing that I'm personally really worried about is the regional and social equity. Regional, because as I told you, the smaller schools tend to close down, and this means that smaller communities, smaller municipalities may not be able to support the local general upper secondary school, which means that somebody living in the middle of nowhere, a long distance from the nearest big town, may not actually have a good chance to attend secondary education because the daily commute might be too long. And not everybody wants to live separately from the parents at the age of 16, 17. This also brings me to my second concern, which is the social equity. As I said at the beginning, secondary education does not have tuition fees, but you still have to buy your materials. And especially in general upper secondary education, the materials can be pretty expensive. You need a good laptop, you need e-materials, you need this and that. In the old days, when we still had, hard copies of books, you could buy the materials secondhand and you could sell them again when you didn't need them anymore. But with e-materials, e-books, nowadays it's usually not possible to resell them or buy them secondhand. You just have to buy them from the publishers. So, approximately 2,000 euros is estimated to be needed for the materials during your general upper secondary education, and that's quite a lot if you come from a low-income family. There are some organizations that help with the financial costs of secondary education, but not everybody wants or knows how to search for help. Well, our current government made the decision of extending the compulsory education until one is 18, so until one has graduated from the secondary education. And supposedly, this means that there will be free secondary education for all. We'll see how that will turn out. I'm very happy about the decision, but worried about the implementation of the decision. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully, it means that more children, more young people will be able to graduate or go to general upper secondary education without the financial worries attached to it. I'm not going to talk more about curriculum reform because it's already past the time for me to finish. I'm just including this for you for self-study, if you like, as well as the links for more information on matriculation examination. I myself, I'm not a big fan of matriculation examination because, based on my experience as, a student and as a teacher, matriculation examination tends to guide the teaching and studying in general upper secondary school a little bit too much. So the students are studying for the examination and not for, for actually having a good command on the subject matter, as is the ideal. Sorry about spending 5 more minutes of your time than was planned. If anyone has questions or comments, I'd be happy to answer. But if you want to finish and leave, I wish you a good weekend. I have had some difficulties with my email, so if you have by chance sent me an email and not received an answer, please do it again. For some reason, I don't receive all my emails. Somebody has a question? Yeah, Raquel, please.
Yes, sorry, because my question is not related to this subject, but I was wondering about a bilingual development course because the schedule has not appeared in SISU yet, and since we are almost at the end of March, I was wondering what was going on with that course.
Bilingual development course, I just received the links because it's organized. The lectures are given by lecturers in University of Turku, and I'm sent the links from there. And I received the links for the first three lectures the day before yesterday. As soon as I can fix the Moodle platform to accept our students, I will open the Moodle platform in our system for you, and then you can start following the lectures. Should
okay,
be
perfect.
Ready by next week.
Okay, thank you very much, Elisa.
Bye-bye. In what year the laptops became necessity? The laptops became an absolute necessity in around 2016, 2017, because that's when they started with the matriculation examination, digital matriculation examination. But even prior to that, many universities, general upper secondary schools actually